This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening, welcome. Thank you for joining. So the first of the two shiurim this evening, we're going to continue on our steps to greatness and look at some of the 48 Kinyani Torah. For those who weren't here last week, just to refresh ourselves about some of the things that we said. We started off with a mashal. That imagine you go out for a special occasion, you go to a fancy restaurant, and you order the finest bottle of wine. The waiter comes along, beautiful bottle of wine, it could be very expensive, £1,000 a bottle of wine, and he gives you two glasses, you and your spouse, and the glasses are smudged, dirty, lipstick marks, breadcrumbs, wine in the bottom of it. It can be the finest wine. But if the glass is not clean, then it's going to spoil the effect of the wine. The purpose of this period, as it were, from Pesach through to Shavuos, is to polish the glass, to make sure that we're ready for Shavuos to be mekabel the Torah. The Torah is Hashem Tamimah. The Torah is a perfect gift. It's us that we need to prepare for it. And that's really the Avodah. How do we go about this Avodah? So we mentioned last week that the counting itself is instructive about how we go about this process. I mentioned the question of Rabbi Lef. Rabbi Lef has a very insightful question that we seem to be inconsistent in the way in which we count. We count the days at the beginning and the weeks at the end, because at the very outset of the beginning of each day, we count the beginning of the day. You know, as soon as the Jewish day starts, which of course is in the night time, we say, Yom Yom Echad La'omer, but we only notch up the weeks at the end of the week. Why aren't we consistent and say, Hayom Yom Echad Shem Shavu Echad Omer? This is the beginning of the first day, the first week of the Omer. Why do we only notch up a week after 7 days, 14 days is 2 weeks, etc.? So his answer was that it's to teach us that we have to do things slowly. We have sort of bite-sized, incremental, step-by-step methods, jobs to try and improve ourselves, to perfect ourselves, to polish. And then after a week, we sort of look back and we take pride in the accomplishments of what we've achieved, and that should serve as a catalyst for further growth. That was basically his idea. And therefore, whatever we decide to do, whatever bite-sized little pieces of avodah we try to do, that's up to every individual. Whether it's going through the spheres, i.e. the Malchus Shebechesed and Hodi, etc., etc., or what we are looking to do is to look at some of the 48 ways of wisdom. Some people work on one a day. And then, you know, the 49th day is getting it all together, Chazara, however you want to look at it. And last week we started looking at some of the Kinyani Torah to try and achieve this goal of polishing the glass that I mentioned. Now, the last week we discussed, the first one was Talmud, just learn, no shortcuts. And then we moved on to Shmiya Sa'ezen. And I mentioned to you the anecdote. Shmias Ozen means attentive listening. And I mentioned to you the anecdote of Rebbe Chanan. Rebbe Chanan was once, he used to go back to his Rebbe, the Chofetz Chaim, every Rosh Hashanah. And after a drosha, the shmuz of the Chofetz Chaim, someone turned to Rebbe Chanan and said, I think the Rebbe said the same thing last year. And Rebbe Chanan said, no, he said 8 words different. That's Shmias Ozen. Shmias Ozen means attentive listening, which is a very difficult art, to listen really attentively. Now, that's, I think, where we're up to. The next one, again, to work through these all Kinyane Torah, that's based on the Mishnah. And obviously, if you look in the first box, paragraph 2, HaTorah Niknes Ba'aboy Mishmoni Dvarim, there are 48 ways to acquire Torah. And not only to acquire Torah, but perhaps to develop and to grow in Ruchnias. The third item is Arichas Fosayim. What is Arichas Fosayim? Articulate speech, which is understood to mean to verbalize. Now, I remember, this going back a few years, when I was studying for my exams, GCSEs, all those years ago, there used to be these revision guides. I think they still are. I don't think this one is still around. But there used to be something called the Let's Revision Guide. And it was like a sort of notes, a summary of the whole syllabus or whatever it was. And it was just a very good revision guide. And I remember there was a hakdama to this revision guide. The hakdama, the introduction, was giving you ideas about how you can study effectively. And one of the things it said was fascinating. It said that if you just read a book, let's say it's, I don't know, a physics textbook, or history textbook, and you just read that book, then after a week, you will remember about 20% of what you read. If, however, you take notes, then you will remain, you'll retain, I think, 50% after a week or something like that. But if you walk around the room and you verbalize the notes that you've taken or what you've been reading, then you will remember, I think, 80% or something like that. In other words, verbalizing something seems to help memory, so we can understand why it's one of the Kinyani Torah. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zichrono Livracha, used to recall about his first exposure to a Beis Medrash. He went to Cambridge before he went to a yeshiva, and he was used to a very quiet forum to study. If you're used to that environment, you know, where you get harshly told to be if you drop a tissue or something in the library, and then you go to the Mira Beis Medrash or wherever you go, you can't hear yourself. It's very challenging. I know one Rav who spent many years in Eretz Yisrael learning. He came back to London. He was a Rav of a Kehila, and he did a PhD on the side. And he did it in a local university, Middlesex University. And he had to write up the thing, and he couldn't... For some reason, he wanted to write it up in the library there in the university. And he couldn't take the quiet. He had to go down to the cafeteria, so he had background noise, so he could write there. There's a bit of noise, because he couldn't get used to it. Anyway, articulating it is a form which aids memory, and that's why it's one of the Kinyani Torah. Interestingly, they say over in the name of Reb Chaim Brisk, that if it's in Yiddish, you say felten hasbara, felten havana. If you can't explain it, it's lacking in your ability to explain it, then you haven't properly helped it. And we can all identify with that. You know, I see it in school all the time. You ask a kid, you explain it, you go over, you learn a tesis with them, and you understand it. Yeah, I think so, Rebbe. So can you say it over? Not enough to say over. If you can't say it over, you don't understand it. That's what Reb Chaim meant. Felt in hasbara, felt in havon. You can't say it over, you can't explain it. Now, the following Tiferes Yisrael, which is on your sheet, it's on page 2. For those listening online, email me and I'll send you the handout, j.golker@gmail.com. There's an amazing Tiferes Yisrael. This is a classic Tiferes Yisrael, a real take-home one. There is a pasuk in Vayelech, just before the Shira of Ha'azinu. The pasuk says, "Ve'onsa Hashira Hazos Lefonav Le'id, Ki Lo Sishachach Mipizare." The Torah should not be forgotten from your children. Now, the Torah calls it a Shira, a song. And in order that you shouldn't forget it, Ki Lo Sishachach Mipizare. The Tiferes Yisrael in Erchin, in Perek Dalet in Maseches Erchin, says something which is quite astonishing. Take a look at this paragraph 3 on the second page. V'hikshu b'taisus. This is his commentary on a Mishnah in Erechin. Lama lo arvinu v'taninu. Why didn't the author of the Mishnah combine the cases in the Mishnah in a more concise form? Hashonim v'erechin minerach. Whatever the context is over there. V'su koshli. And I've got another question. Lama shani belishne. Why does it change its wording? Bereisha nokat nider, or b'sefer nerach. We switch from nider, making an oath, to nerach, which is another form of making an oath. Why does it switch its language? Now, don't worry too much about the question. And also, v'koshali b'chol duchta d'toni chasuri mechser v'hachi ka'ama. Now, there is a phrase in Gemara, it appears many times, that there's a kasher on the Mishnah. And the Gemara concludes on many occasions, chasure mechsura, there is words missing from the Mishnah, chaser, it's lacking. V'hochi ka'amar, and this is the real correct version of the Mishnah. And you see that many times. Im Kain asked the Tiferes Yisrael, like an obvious question. Lama lo higiyu ha-Mishnah. So just amend it. Why do we retain this seemingly erroneous version of the Mishnah? If the Gemara concludes, chasure mechsura, there are words missing, v'hochi ktani, v'hochi ka'amar, then it should say it. Why indeed is there a corrupted version of this Mishnah? Now, next paragraph. Vulule mistafina, were it not for the fact that I'd be too scared to say this very bold suggestion I'm about to say, I would say it, but he says it anyway. What the Gemara says in Megillah, what Tosfos says in Megillah, at the end of Megillah Lamed Beis, Amud Aleph, someone who learns without a sing-song, without a niggun, it won't stay with you. V'chein kosav amrinin gemara, gemara is mrasa tehei, to sort of sing the gemara. Shahila hin zmiris miyuchadin l'chol mishnah v'mishnah. Says the Teres Yisrael, a very creative explanation, that there were songs, special songs, for every mesechta. And there was a tune. This is how you did brachas, this is how you do Shabbos, this is how you do bom basra, bom tzir, bom... And why were they done in song? Because if you learn it in a tune, you'll remember it. Because remember, until the times of Rebbe, it was a Torah Shebal Peh. There was nothing written down. It was all a memory game. It was a memory exercise. You had to remember Torah, and there was no writing down at all. You're not allowed to. V'alyidei hanigun nizkehetev lishna demasnisin. And that's why, through the song, you're going to be able to remember the words of the Mishnah. And you did that, and the nigun fitted in to the words as was. So if later you have a kasha on the Mishnah and you change the words, well, you can't just change the words of the Mishnah because you've ruined the song. It's not going to fit. Next paragraph. You know what? Sometimes he chose a word which perhaps didn't, you know, it wasn't quite right. But he chose that word because perhaps it fitted into the tune, or it rhymed, or something like that. According to the specific song for that Mishnah. There's a concept sometimes of zuv ein tzarech lemazu. In other words, I'll tell you A, and ein tzarech loman, obviously B. Well, if it's obviously, then don't say it. Why is it there? Because it helps, it goes with the song. Amazing. Again, it fits into the song. Even though there were things missing in the wording of the Mishnah, they left it at that. If you're going to change the words and change the text, you've killed the song. And that will destroy the memory aid that the song achieves. This answers lots of different questions. Okay, so very, very interesting pshat of the Teres Yisrael, but the root of it is that we don't want to forget Torah. And articulating it, harichas fasayim, is a means to remember Torah, to explain it, and to chazer it, to say it over. That's a means of remembering Torah, and thereby growing in Torah. Let's do maybe one more. Binas Halev, an understanding heart. So this is number 4 in our list of 48. Well, what exactly does that mean? The difficulty, of course, is this is one of the ways to be Kona Torah. If you're Kona Torah, then the intellect surely is the key point, not the heart. The heart is the seat of the emotions. The answer is, again, there are different ways of explaining this, but Rabbi Twersky, he says the following idea, and I saw this in the Sefer called 49 Steps of Greatness. I forget the name of the author, but he quoted Rabbi Twersky with an explanation of a famous Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara in Erevin says, you've got a machlokes beisham beisila, and both are true. Beisham and beisila, their words are true. Elu divrei Elokim chayim. Mipnei ma zochu beisila likvay halacha kamoison. Famous question: why is the halacha like beisila? They're both saying truths. Answers the Gemara, because Beis Hillel were easygoing and were foregoing, and they would explain their words and the words of Beis Shammai. Not only that, they would actually say over Beis Shammai's words first. Now, think about that for a second, it's amazing. You're sitting at a table, you're sitting at a Shabbos lunch, and you're discussing a certain, you know, heated issue, you're having a debate. Isn't it all too often that we just want to express our opinion? How much do we actually listen to the other person's? What Beis Hillel are doing over here is they say to Beis Shammai, I want to hear what you have to say. Before I express my own thoughts and sort of embed them, I want to hear what you have to say, and I want to hear it before sort of it's affected by my own emotional biases by expressing my own views first. So I want to hear what you have to say, and then if I agree, then fine. If I don't agree, I'll express my views. That's amazing. That's being a Salev. For example, he says, you've got someone who's sitting, famous Mishnah in Sukkah. So the guy is sitting in the Sukkah, but his table, imagine you've got like a kitchen, and you have a Sukkah just abutting that kitchen. So he's sitting in the Sukkah, but the Shulchan, he can't be able to step out into the Sukkah, it doesn't fit. So the Shulchan is still in the kitchen. So he's sitting there having his lunch, sitting in the Sukkah. The danger is, imagine this is the wall of the end of the kitchen, and this is the kitchen, this is the table, that the plate is here. The danger is I'm going to lean over into the kitchen, I'm not in the Sukkah anymore. So are you allowed to do that? Machlok is Beisham Beis Hillel. Beisham Poslim, Beisham Machshirin. Beisham Beisham says you can't do that because you'll lean over. And Beisham Machshirin. But you see the Beishamai's view is expressed first, as it always is, and then Beis Hillel come along. You lower yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will raise you. And if you're trying to raise yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will lower you. Same idea. In other words, Beis Hillel had the modesty and the foregoing nature to hear Beis Shammai first, and not to be sort of swayed by their own emotional investment in their particular viewpoint. Moreover, there's another aspect over here. Bina Salev means that sometimes there's a disconnect between theory and practice. So he brings a case, a story of Rav Shach. Rav Shach one time came to the Ponovitch kitchen, the Chadar Ochel, the dining room, and he saw something which upset him enormously. There were three new boys in the yeshiva, and they had arrived, and it was lunchtime, and they didn't know how things work. You know, it takes a while till you figure out where you line up, where you take the food, what you do with your plate when you're finished. It takes time. So he saw them, the three of them standing there. So later he called them Musa Shmuz, and he stood up by the Aron HaKodesh, and he said, everyone, Ponovitch, one of the greatest yeshivas, everyone here has learned Chumash Rashi. And even if you didn't get to the end of Vayikra, Parshas Vayera, four parshas in you got to, and you're familiar with the story where three malachim come. Avraham Avinu is in pain, an old man recovering from surgery, and he sees three Arab wayfarers passing by. He's chalishing to entertain them. He runs out, he goes and he invites them in. Tremendous hospitality. We've all done that. We're all familiar with that in Chumash and Rashi. And yet, you can have a Chadar Ochel, a dining room, where you have three people standing there, and everyone just carries on eating their lunch. No one goes over to them and says, can I help you? Shalom Aleichem. What's the problem? That there is a disconnect between the theory and the practice. In theory, I know exactly what Avraham Avinu did, but in practice, I'm having lunch now. It's making the connection between the theory and the practice. And therefore, Bina Salev is very important, because Bina Salev means one has to internalize Torah. One has to secure it in our hearts, not just in our minds. And that's really the fourth. And we're all guilty of it. We're all guilty of it. But sometimes it's, they tell a joke of a fellow 100 years ago, and he makes Aliyah in one of the second yeshiva, whatever it was. And he goes to Petach Tikva, and he's very excited. He's now in Eretz Yisrael. And he's caught up in the excitement of the occasion. He's walking the land, the sun is shining, and he comes to an orange orchard. And he pulls off this orange, this big, delicious orange. He pulls it open, and he makes broch and eats it. And all of a sudden, the farmer comes out and screams, Lo Signov, Lo Signov! And, it's not his orchard, it's not his oranges. And this fellow says, oh, Eretz Yisrael, isn't it wonderful? The sun is shining, the sky is blue, the oranges are delicious, and as you're eating oranges, some of you hear Dvar Torah. Right? Obviously, there's a disconnect between theory and practice. Lo Signov, you can't steal, it's not your orange. But that's the point. That's Bina Salev, to try and internalize, not just in our minds, but in our hearts as well. Okay, Mr. Shem, to be continued.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.